It's a special edition Shoppers John Deere Reaction Tuesday on Sports Radio 610. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
It is a Reaction Tuesday. It is also a Victory Tuesday as the Texans flush that two-game losing streak down the toilet and get a dub against their in-state rivals, the Dallas Cowboys, and they beat the brakes off of them, as we predicted, 34-10. And they've scored every way you could think of, except for on special teams. But they scored offensively, defensively. They scored in the first half. They scored in the second half. They got turnovers. They dominated this game. And they should be in good shape right now as they take on the Titans at home and the Jags. The next two games, the Titans have been awful. The Jags just got 52 put up on them.
Bring on the Lions.
So, and by the way, the Colts play the Lions next week. So, good luck to them with that one. So, they look like they're in pretty good shape. But, as we said on the other side, after each game, we try to figure out the grade. The grade for the quarterback, C.J. Stroud. He is the reason why there is such excitement here and the thought of why this team could potentially win a championship. He was 23 of 34, 257, no touchdowns, one pick, three carries, 26 yards. What's your grade, Clint, as our quarterback for C.J. Stroud?
I'll go C plus for C.J. Stroud. Again, I want to remind everybody, I'm grading CJ Stroud on a top five quarterback scale. What those guys do week in, week out, and if they don't play up to that standard, then we hold it against them. And look, I think this was a game where he executed the game plan well early on, what he was asked to do. He working low to high, working the quick game, accurate in the screen game. But this boils down to red zone etiquette, if you will. The turnover. I don't know if they were quite in the red zone yet, but it was damn near. The turnover. That's a throw to Nico Collins. That ball is. I mean, when you throw a ball to Nico Collins, and Nico can't even get a hand on it, you know how bad of a miss that is. I mean, that is.
I mean, Hooker was beat. He just happened to be standing in the right place for the ball.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, you can argue that he missed his spot by 6 to 8 yards on a ball that shouldn't have traveled in the air more than 15, 20 yards max. When you do what you did last year and you're viewed as a top five quarterback, you can't, that can't happen. Not on that spot in the field and not to that receiver, one of your best guys. That and the miss to Tank Dell on 3rd and 1.
I got to know who made that call.
Oh, I hate the call. I mean, I
got to know. Like, it was fast and rushing up, whatever. I don't know. Like, whoever, I think Bobby gets it, because even if you gave him the ability to run up and make that call, we can't be making that call on 3rd and inches. But who the hell made that call? Although he was open and the throw should have been completed. That shouldn't even have been
the
thought.
Call.
He's wide open, CJ.
I hate the call.
That was CJ, and
I'm glad.
Bobby, I don't know.
I'm glad you bring that up because, again,
what was that?
This is there's more to it with CJ than just the bad throw. Again, another ball that is unacceptably bad. Like, again, we look at, it's an incomplete. That ball missed its mark by damn near 10 yards.
It could have been pick six.
Yes.
It could have been pick six the way he missed it. And he was open.
Yeah. Yeah, open for the first down. And so those two misses killed drives and were like, again, unacceptable misses for what we know C.J. Stroud is capable of doing. Now, I think there's some kind of injury, which we'll talk about that later on. Mm. But the other part to this is at some point, and I know C.J.'s young, and most fans understand that I'm not going to let the greatness of C.J. Stroud last year put me in a position where I'm putting unfair expectations on the kid, right? I'm not saying he should be here yet, but we need CJ to get here sooner rather than later. When that play comes in, 3rd and 1, you've got to be aware of what you're doing, who you're playing, who's in the backfield, and to me, the quarterback's got to go, wait a minute. It's third and one. Understand the situation. You turn around and you hand the damn football to Joe Mixon in that situation. So at some point, I want C.J. Stroud to get to a spot where he saves Bobby Slowick from those kind of calls. Again, not complaining that he's not there yet, but if you're going to be mentioned in the top five quarterbacks in the league, which I think he strives to be, and time to time he actually is, those are the kind of game management type situations where you got to make the coach right. I think he played a B-plus level quarterback, if we're being honest. But I think when you make those two big misses and big mistakes in critical situations, kill drives, I got him at a C-plus.
Yeah, as I see here on the 5-Hour Energy Fan text line, I see CJ was a solid B-minus. CJ was a C. I was at the game. I give CJ a B-minus, but I see some light at the end of the tunnel. He was on the injury report with the hand, probably caused some of his inaccuracy. The line blocked well, and his feet looked less happy. He'll be graded at an A next week. Book it. Someone text in. I'm with a B, C minus, C as well. Yeah, I'm in the C range. Also,
I said C plus, correct?
Yeah, C plus. Okay. I'm in the C range. They're just misses that we're starting to see to pop up that are just like he missed Dalton Schultz on a quick little pass that would have, you know, put you in a third and short type of situation.
I think Tank had two catches where the ball's low for some reason.
Low, and if he catches it, he can run, he can move on one of those. Just off, right? And I think I heard Chris Sims say this last week. When you think about the top two guys coming into this season that were the most accurate quarterbacks, Joe Burrow and him, not shocking that they play games similarly, but he has just been off on throws. And he made the one that was off. I see someone text in and said, it looks like Nico went in and he threw it out. No, that was just a miss. Like, he saw where he was going. That was just
one of them. I can't remember which one it was because I haven't gone back and watched it again yet. But one of them, he's stepping hard left, and it looks like he's trying to execute almost like a no look or kind of looking the safety off with his shoulder and then kind of trying to, you know, one of them exotic Pat Mahomes type throws.
Arm angle thing.
Yeah, which I hate other guys trying to do that. I'm okay with Pat doing it. He's won championships with it. I hate other guys trying to do it. So
he can stop doing it too.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
It's weird because it's not a one-off.
Yeah.
We're starting to see it a little bit more where he's becoming more, you know, not more and more, but just flare-ups of inaccuracies that catch you off guard because he threw the pick, and the other one on the third and one, again, inches. I don't know whose call that was. I'll assume Bobby till I hear anything different. Yeah, though they rushed it real quick. They ran up on the line of scrimmage real quick to do that. But
what happened before that? Something was questioned.
Joe Mixon ran the ball, and it looked like it was a question if he was the first. Because I remember Courtney said, is that a first down? Maybe they thought it was a first down. That's why they got up there and ran that play real quick. I don't know, but it was whatever it was stupid to come out and pass it. Now, he was wide open, and the ball, and you would expect that he would make that easy throw, but he missed that one so bad, Clint, that it was thrown so far inside that the DB, if he would, you know, running like hell to try to get back to catching up to where Tank was, that would have been a pick six and could have kind of, I don't know, changed the game, but it would have made the game feel tighter than it should have been. So, I don't know, Clint. I know you've been saying there's something maybe off with him, because that's what I'm saying. This isn't a one-off. This is multiple times here in the last couple of games we're seeing him just off. We've seen him miss Dalton Schultz a couple of times on that similar route that he missed him on yesterday. And as you said, I think we talked about it before, you think something may be up with him.
Well, I thought when he popped up on the injury report, Ron, I thought that was his left hand. And so I didn't think much.
Right.
I misread it or misheard it, whatever. So when Sean Pendergast said it was his right hand last night, I thought that makes sense, because if you watch, there was a really good angle and they replayed it. The throw to Tank that was so badly missed. I mean, that ball comes out of his hand. Before it ever comes out of his hand, it's like it's slipping on him. It's turning sideways. It appears that there's something going on, and this would, having obviously thrown a lot of footballs in my time, trained quarterbacks and seen things, like it's either his index finger, like one of his index finger, his middle finger on his right hand, or the thumb, obviously, like those three dominant fingers on a grip, or there's something wrong with his wrist. And that would cause, like, a dude that's as great of a passer of the football and as accurate as he is to have some, a handful of throws where you're like, what in the hell was that? Like, that thing just come out completely wrong.
Yeah.
And here's the other thing. CJ has a really compact stroke. In fact, it's so compact, it's hard to fathom. It's hard to understand how he generates the power that he does to make some of the throws that we see him make with that compact of a stroke. The reason I say that is because when you have that compact of a stroke, it's typically for guys that are pros and are fully developed and strong and some of the most elite passers of the football we've ever seen. Not some, the most elite passers of the football we've ever seen. Like, when you got to put all of that together with that compact stroke, you typically don't have the ball slipping around out of your hand and your wrist being an issue. That's typically something that's works in your favor. Somehow, some way, there's an injury with his right hand. And again, it wouldn't shock me if it's one of those three dominant fingers or a wrist that he's having some issues with.
So it's more injury related, not like.
Yeah, I think to me, what I saw yesterday was much more there's something wrong physically than, boy, he's seeing ghosts and the pressure's getting to him. I thought the couple of times, again, I don't know why we felt the need to go to it, but there were a couple of times where there was some hold the ball, deeper play action, some deeper, mid-range progression type throws where he was holding the football and he got pressured. I thought he eluded pressure last night better than he has all year long in terms of just last minute micro movement, guy slides by and boom, he either goes and runs or he makes a throw. I thought he looked better against the Cowboys than he has all year with those things. There was a panic button before where this is just, boy, he seemed to stay cool, calm, and collected, kept his eyes down the field. I thought he did some really good things. This watching it, just TV copy, as a fan, it looked to me like there's something that just hits him and he can't quite control the football the way that he typically does.
Yeah. But then he makes some throws like we just see here.
Yep.
With Tank Dell, he was able to get rolling today. As someone texted in, it was like, yeah, to me, somebody texted and said, I give CJ a C- because it didn't seem like he had the offensive line to really blame last night. They seemed to hold up pretty well. And he still had those misses.
Yeah. I mean, the misses are critical. And I mean, if without the misses, I mean, look, I got to believe that C.J. Stroud had a little something to do with some of the run checks. I love the way that he commits it to the quick game and gets the football out. The executed a screen game we're watching right now, executed it tremendously. There's something to be said about a young dude getting out there and executing clean and crisp that I can grade a man high for. But you throw a pick down there like that with that kind of miss, and then you miss a third and one. You kill two drives with just inaccurate throws. It's hard for me to get you up in that AB range, man.
Yeah. Speaking of that, D'Amico, he was trying to get them up out of there quick, wasn't he? Going for it on fourth and two down there, not taking it, but he was trying to get this thing. And you could see him. They caught him on the camera after Joe scored, I believe, a second touchdown, saying, like, put it on him.
Yeah.
Like, put it on him. He was really aggressive. He wanted to run them boys up out the gym quick, which they ended up doing. But hopefully CJ is fine. That'll be something we watch for. I don't think he talked about any kind of an injury in the post game. Maybe later on this week when we do hear from him. Usually that's Wednesdays. We'll see if anything changes. It'll be tomorrow. Things changes due to the weird week. But that'll be one to watch to see if he is struggling at all with any kind of hand situations for him. So So, yeah, big game for the Texans, and he played well enough. We'll see if he continues to kind of start. We kind of start to see the guy that we're used to seeing clearly, and we'll talk about that, I'm sure, today and through the week. The return of Nico Collins helped and helped in a major way. By the way, as someone texted in the game, his stat line would have looked a lot different had he gotten that 77-yard touchdown pass to kick the game off.
Well, that one and then the ball that got overturned where C.J. one-hopped it to him, and I mean, he had 100 yards worth of catches overturned, or penalties are overturned.
That damn Nico, boy, he had me sold. My man got up, did the celebration and everything. Yeah. I looked back there, I said, damn, I mean, that ball clearly bounced. He didn't have a chance. I mean, he celebrated. He got up. And I said, damn, boy, I mean, you really sold that one. They weren't even going to look at that one. All right, coming up as we continue, Clint says this was a big fan topic from yesterday's game. We will discuss that and let you know what that is coming up next.
It's a special edition Shoppers John Deere Reaction Tuesday on Sports Radio 610. Here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Couple of things of note on this Mad Dog Tuesday. Your chance on a Texans ticket Tuesday to win a pair of tickets, front row seats, in the bullpen as the Texans will take on the Tennessee Titans coming up on Sunday. You'll have a chance to win a pair of tickets. A little noon game action. Get there and have a good time and watch the Texans play one of the worst teams in football. Not as bad as the team they just played, but one of the worst teams in football. Should get to 8-4, but you'll have a chance to win a pair of those front row seat tickets coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. So that's a programming note for that, and a programming note for later on this week. Right here on Sports Radio 610, the general manager and my frozen ice cream, frozen yogurt buddy, Nick Casario, will join Payne and Pendergast coming up.
And Payne.
Or that. Coming up 7:30 a.m. Thursday this week. Later on this week, 7:30, Nick Casario will join Payne and Pendergast. So it should be interesting to see what he's having to talk about there as they head into the back half of the regular season. So good to go there. By the way, guys, I know you're waiting for this. The Boston Bruins have fired Joe Montgomery.
I saw that.
I'll be damned.
And a bitch. Damn, Joe.
Hate that for you, Joe.
So man, early in the season.
It's Thanksgiving next week, Joe.
You a good vacation, man. I got cut the week of Thanksgiving. Had me a hell of a Thanksgiving.
Doggone it. Anybody got any idea who Joe Montgomery is?
Mm-mm.
I don't have him either.
Yeah.
Is the old boy in Montgomery Gentry, the country music duo?
I don't know. Might be.
Montgomery Gentry was performing in Tomball not too long ago.
That's right.
Was he?
Mm-hmm.
What arena is at Tomball?
It was for the Boots for Troops event.
Oh, yeah. The one you were injured. That's right.
They're both not still alive, are they?
Oh, I don't know. May have been some fill-ins.
Somebody look that up. Are they both still alive?
I thought one of them passed. I could be wrong.
It's possible.
I hate to write somebody off and ain't gone yet.
Yeah. Yeah. We lost Joe Montgomery, though, from his job for the Boston Bruins. Still with us. Well, I'll tell you, I've been fired. Hell, I was fired on this day about 6 years ago.
Oh, happy anniversary.
It is. On this day, November 19th, I was fired right before Thanksgiving. Pregnant wife.
You got a lot of time with the family over Thanksgiving, though, didn't you?
A lot of time. So good.
Hey, that's one of the best. I got cut in Dallas on Thanksgiving week. I went home, and it's that game where Randy Moss went off. In Cowboys in Texas Vikings Stadium at the time. Vikings came in there. And I thought Jerry's full of crap. He said, go on, enjoy your week. Go on, enjoy Thanksgiving, man. We'll scoop back up and put you back on the practice squad, put you back on the roster. We'll get you back in the building. After I was like, yeah, okay, you just let me down soft. So I went on home. Hey, balls out all week, man. I watched him get the hell kicked out of him, and Jerry called him back. Hey, man, he's on back to Dallas, man. We'll get you back in the fold. I said, all right, cool. I'll be there in the morning. Give me a paycheck.
Yeah, boy, there you go. Probably lit up, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
All right. last night, the Texans obviously had a big win, and we saw they scored on defense, a lot of it due to the pressure. But you said the lack of pass rush early was a big fan topic. I didn't catch that on Texans Twitter or anything like that. But the lack of the pass rush, I don't know. I guess maybe I thought they were on his ass a lot.
Well, I think early on, the success that Cooper Rush was having,
tight ends and stuff,
tight ends over the middle, and look, he made some good throws, anticipated well early, and there was a lot of space underneath, and I think on my text chain that I have, by the way, you can go to textingtexans.com. It's a free subscription during the game and halftime, before the game, after the game. I'll text out some takeaways, and every now and then throughout the week we'll do some things. Textingtexans.com. But Ron, I was getting a lot of feedback on that. A lot of folks were texting back about, where's the pass rush? Cooper Rush just sitting his ass back there picking us apart. Where's the pass rush? Here's the deal. I believe that was D'Amico's plan. I believe D'Amico came in there and he said, we don't have the cover guys right now to tighten up and just play a ton of man and pressure this quarterback. It's a backup quarterback. What we're going to do is we're going to go out here and we're going to make Cooper Rush sit in the pocket. If our down four guys get there, cool. But we're going to make him sit in the pocket, deal with whatever pressure we can create. We're going to force him to make the more difficult throws, the more surgical throws over the middle of the field, over the linebackers, in front of the safeties, between the linebackers and the windows.
Make him read.
We're going to make him, make the reads, make him process, all that kind of stuff, and which is a really good plan against a backup quarterback. And once he proved he could do that, when you're not heating him up, I think D'Amico said, all right, enough is enough. Stingley, you go get on Lamb's ass, and we're going to heat this kid up, and we're going to get us a sack straight out of halftime. Danielle Hunter goes and gets him a sack, much like he did against the Patriots up in New England, and they started heating him up, and the game changed for him, right? So I think there was just I don't want folks to read too much into that initial first quarter and a half, maybe first two quarters of this D line not being able to get pressure. I think it was the plan. Make the backup prove that he can play football. Make the backup prove that he can process, throw the ball through picket fences, make all the right decisions. And if he can do that, then we'll add a little bit of risk to our plate and we'll fire him up a little bit and see if our pressure doesn't bust that pipe of Cooper Rush.
Maybe I'm off. I just don't remember him like just sitting back. I felt like there was a lot of quick stuff. I think they were trying to do what you've been talking about Texans. Quick to the tight ends, quick stuff like that.
You're right, though.
But it wasn't like he was just sitting back there for 3 or 4 seconds.
Right. No, there were times when he was throwing the dig over the middle of the field to the tight ends and some slower developing stuff. But to your point, like, I just don't think D'Amico was comfortable with covering down with Kadar Hallman, and now we know Jeff Okuda, why you wouldn't, right? I just think the plan was force him to get the ball out, force him to make the right read, get it out quick, make the discipline read, have patience, and all that kind of thing. And if he does it, then we'll heat him up. For those out there that may have been concerned when it was a 17-10, possibly a 17-13 game, and everybody's talking about where the hell's the pass rush, that there was a method to that madness. That wasn't just guys that were ineffective. I think there was a method to that madness of making a backup quarterback be disciplined and patient and make throws that, quite frankly, you know, they're not as good as starters making those throws. It's why they're career backups. And so I think there was – point is, I just think there was a method to the madness, and it wasn't just, boy, this pass rush isn't it.
Yeah, and then also I think, as we know, the game dictates it. And the game dictated there once the lead started to spread out that – and when you stop the run, they weren't having major success there with the run. You stop the run and you kind of felt like they were going to throw every time. You then saw 55, 96, you know those guys, 95.
McSettle got him another one, didn't he?
Yeah, Tim. And Tim just whooped. I mean, he whooped Zach Martin's ass. I mean, that's all. Hell, Zach went out of the game after that. He whooped his ass. Boy, just took him. But you started to see them just absolutely say to hell with the run, we're going to the quarterback, and they pinned their ears back, and we started to see aggressiveness. Like, I don't know that I remember that much blitzing in the game anyway. And I think a lot of that might be to what you're talking about, like, hey, let's make sure we don't have any.
Well, I guess I probably should have couched it more of like you said, D'Amico was by design going to give some quick throws and see if he was going to be disciplined. He was going to minimize the risk and try to not Kadar Hallman or Jeff Okuda get beat deep early in his game. Just see if the quarterback will make the underneath throws. And once he did that, it was like, all right, we're going to have to get after him a little bit. And they put a nail in the coffin late.
Yeah, Danielle Hunter was they couldn't do nothing with him. I mean, that was his name was called repeatedly. All right, coming up, look, college football. Lane Kiffin. He always likes to speak, but he had something to say about what's happening with college football and now the new playoff. We knew, hey, when it was 2, there were people talking about 2. When it's 4, people are going to talk about 4. When it's 12, people are going to talk about 12. There's something that he is kind of pointing to that could be an issue in this 12-team system. We'll discuss that coming up next right here live on the track.
It's a special edition Shoppers John Deere Reaction Tuesday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's The Drive with Sterner and Hughley.
Rush in trouble. Strip sack. Who's got it? It's still loose. Texans pick it up. Here's Barnett on the run. 20-15, 10-5. Touchdown! Scoop! Score! Derek Barnett!
Tyler Guyton, thank you very, very much.
Boy, what a hit by Petrie to jar that ball loose. Barnett with the run to the end zone.
That was your 5-hour energy, high energy play of the game. 5-hour energy, the official energy shot of Sports Radio 610 and football super fans. And that play kind of opened it up. It was 20-10 there, and that there made it 27-10. Scoop and score. Barnett comes around, beats Guyton, the left tackle, who played his last play there after he hurt his shoulder. But he goes around him, hits Cooper Rush's arm, strips it. Guyton catches it and then says, "Nah, man, I'm about to pick up this first down." And then Jalen Petrie, who's always around the ball, comes around and jars it loose. And then Derek Barnett doesn't just fall on it. No, he scoops it up and he runs it in to give the Texans a lead and really made the game. Like I said, I never ever had a moment in which I thought the Texans wouldn't win the game. But that really put it out of reach.
Yeah, that put him to sleep. That was over. Is it me or did Derek really look his age right there?
On the run in?
Yeah. You know, Derek and
how old is Derek?
I believe Derek and Hughes are both they wear big baggy sweats at practice and all that kind of stuff and Derek isn't as clean in that uni but I think he just don't give a rip actually. It's not as well put together as everything else. And then he's a little bit on the bigger side for older defensive end.
He's 28. He ain't that old.
Yeah, I think he's been at it.
An old soul.
I think he's been at it for a while. He definitely plays old, but boy, I tell you, that was a hell of a play. And every time he gets an opportunity, my man goes out there and changes the game. There ain't no doubt about that.
As I said earlier, his play and their play is making things. You know, missing your best defensive player in Will Anderson Jr., who has been that this year, your most consistent defensive player, a guy that has been in a many people's top 5 defensive player of the year award list at the midway point, missing him. You got D'Anico Autry, who caused a turnover last week against the Lions. Barnett caused a turnover, scooped up and scored. And then obviously Danielle Hunter on the other side, making it not feel as big of a loss as other losses have been for this team. So big one for him. By the way, remember, not only on Thursday we hear from Nick Caserio, you can hear tomorrow live right here on The Drive here on Sports Radio 610, D'Amico Ryans. We'll have him and get his thoughts and see what he says about the game after watching the tape and then getting ready for on a short week to face the Tennessee Titans coming up on Sunday.
I got another one for you real quick. Maybe a little runner-up here, Ron, on the 5-hour play of the game. Mm. Obviously, when that one happened, there was nothing going to be bigger. But I'm going to be honest with you. After I watched the Nico Collins screen to the crib, I felt really good about the Texans at that point. I mean, when I watched that, I mean, yes, Nico being healthy is part of it.
It's crazy. That's what he did the last time he played. His last play was pulling away from everybody.
Over the top on a post.
Against the Bills. Yeah. And then he came right out in his first play.
And here he is. I mean, it's crazy, man. Dude's living right, and he's a hell of a player. There's no doubt about it. But just like that play, as a Texans fan, that play in itself, when that happened, I was like, yeah, if Dallas is going to let that happen, they're as bad as Ron said. I mean, if you're going to let Nico Collins, the story of Monday Night Football, his return, if you're going to let that guy go untouched on a screen.
77.
Yeah, your ass ain't ready. You're finna get skulldrug. I knew at that point right there. I was like, yeah, this over. It's over. It's over. So that would
they
be
decided
my.
They decided to go to the slower death.
Yeah.
Of Joe Mixon.
Yeah, yeah. So a play that didn't even count. It would be in the running for me until obviously the strip sack, then the cause fumble by Petrie, then the pick. By the way, on that play, learned this last night on the post game. Did you know the last time that a player had a strip sack that he recovered for a touchdown? You know who it was?
J.J. Watt.
D'Amico Ryans.
Huh. About that.
Old linebacker.
Recovered his own strip sack for a touchdown. D'Amico Ryans. Last guy to do it.
That was a hell of a celebration he gave.
Now Derek had to one-up him, right? Strip sack. O-lineman picks it up. Petrie strip sack. Or I guess a cause fumble, and then he picks it up and goes to the house. So, little different avenue there, but a little common ground between him and the old head coach.
Yeah. All right, we'll continue to react to the Texans' big win in Dallas, but I do want to get a little college football. Lane Kiffin, head coach of the Ole Miss Rebels, he had this to say. He said, "I talked to other coaches, so I'll just kind of give you the feeling from some other coaches that." You know, they don't want to be in it. Speaking of the championship game, the SEC championship game, conference championship games, the reward to get a bye versus the risk to get knocked out completely, that's a really big risk. Lane Kiffin on the SEC championship game. This will be interesting to see down the stretch, Clint.
So hold on. That's a little bit of a tough follow for me. So Lane Kiffin is talking about whether it's better to be in the SEC championship
game or to not be
the third best team and not make it and still get in the college football playoffs.
Yeah, because...
And he's saying he talked to other coaches and they would rather...
Not get in it, because if you lose, you're out. Because, like, right now, this scenario, because right now there's something wrong with it, because Penn State is sitting more comfortable than any other SEC team. They've got a better chance to make it. And they are fourth in the Big Ten right now. They've got a better chance to make it right now than Texas, than Georgia, than all of them right now. And their best win is Illinois. Because if they went out, if they beat Minnesota and they beat whoever, Maryland, their last two games, yep, they are going to get in. And if, let's say, let's go to Tyler's team. If A&M, if they beat Texas and they go in to the SEC championship game and lose to, would it be Georgia, whoever that would be, if they were to lose, it could be Ole Miss, if they lose in that game, that would give them two losses and they'd be in danger of not making it.
Gig them.
Or would that give them three losses?
They'd give them three.
You got two right now?
South Carolina and Notre Dame.
That's right. That would give them three losses and they're out. Or if they just won and didn't make it, they'd have two losses and have a better chance to get in. Now, obviously, you can flat out get in if you win the thing. But it is – because
get in and get a bye if you win the thing. So that's what, yes, I think what Lane's talking about. You go to the SEC championship and risk not playing – but
out on the whole thing.
Yeah, missing out on all of it if you lose, but you also go to the SEC championship and you potentially could get a bye. And what he's saying is the bye is not worth the risk of losing. Yeah, huh? There's no perfect system, and there's obviously going to be issues. I mean, there's going to be a team get a bye that's not in the top four in the country.
Yeah, either like the Big 12 winner or Boise. I think Boise. We'll see the poll come out tonight. I bet it is Boise over probably BYU, Colorado, or I think those are the two.
I mean, it's not perfect.
The Penn State thing, I got a real problem with. Maybe a real problem is a little strong. I don't want to act like I'm that emotional.
You make a great point. It's a great case.
Illinois' best win is Penn State's best win is against Illinois, and they're more comfortable than Ohio State. If Ohio State wins out, and then they lose to Oregon again,
yeah,
they'd have two losses. Like, I think they would make it ahead of a one-loss Penn State team that they beat head-to-head on the road. But I don't know. It's not as comfortable. Like, Penn State knows. Somehow, Penn State, their best win is against Illinois, and the only team that is worth the damn they've played is Ohio State. They know they control their destiny. If they win their next two games, they're going to be one of the top 12.
Well, the interesting thing about this is that and it's beautiful in my opinion, is the year they go to a 12-team playoff, there is no clear-cut top four. Like, there's more parity in college football this year than we've ever seen. Like, for the first time ever, I'm sure it's been before, but, like, you can look at this and say, you know, if Colorado gets in, they could make a run and win this thing. If Boise State, like Boise State is a real chance. You get a first round bye in the college ball playoff, you could win a college ball playoff team and like be down to the final four.
Yeah,
legit, I could see some of these quote unquote lesser teams competing with anybody. That nobody out there right now is unbeatable.
That's what I'm saying, Tyler. Would you rather sit there beating Texas, have two losses, and know that you're going to get into the college football playoff or go to the SEC championship game, risk losing and be completely out, or win and get a bye?
I want whatever combination gives me the Longhorns very upset and the Texas A&M Aggies in the playoff. November 30th is almost here, boys.
The beautiful thing about it for y'all is that the road goes through Austin. Are actually through Texas. College Station.
You control your own destiny right now if you're the Aggies.
The beauty of this 12-team playoff as it pertains to us right here in Texas and Aggies and Longhorns is that game, assuming they handle their business the way they should this week, that game in College Station for the first time, Texas and Texas A&M is literally going to be for a playoff spot.
Yeah, most likely.
I mean, think about what that
If Texas wins, it will be. Texas wins, I think they'll be.
Which won't happen.
Well, Texas could lose and probably still get in. But there's because that would catapult A&M to a top 10 football team.
Yeah, but if A&M.
And probably into the SEC. I'm not looking at it right now, but probably into the SEC championship.
Yeah, it would put them in the SEC championship game.
That would be.
But if they lose in the SEC championship game, I don't think they get into the playoff.
Who?
A&M.
Oh, no, I three loss. Yeah, there's a chance of three loss. But I'm just talking about the ramifications of that Texas A&M game.
It's huge.
Is bigger than we could have thought.
That boy Lane is over there thinking, right now we've been sitting here at 7-8 seed. If we went out, there's no way that we're going to drop out this thing. We slip into that SEC championship game and we play a pissed off Georgia team again, or we run into, you know, A&M or whatever, and we lose. We out this puppy.
Time to expand to 16.
And while Penn State's sitting over there just not playing nobody and just in. That's right, they'll lose.
Like
all
Ohio
right.
State, that I one mean,
that's,
here.
That's Big Ten.
Yes. They're the fourth place team of the Big Ten, and they control their destiny as much as anybody in the SEC.
I mean, think about it. The Pac-12 team that jumped in there is winning the whole thing, and then you look at the other Big Ten teams, like Michigan's nowhere to be found. Penn State's going to get a cakewalk in, and the only one's going to have to earn their way into it's going to be Ohio State.
Yep.
And Oregon, obviously. I'm talking about the Big Ten, the original Big Ten schools.
Yep.
It's always been the story of the Big Ten. The schedule year over year is unbelievably weak.
Especially compared to the other conference.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what you got coming up before?
We're going to break Bobby down, Ron. I'm going to call an adjustment on you here. I'm going to call an audible on you here. We're going to break Bobby down. Bobby Slowick was the biggest topic last week for the Houston Texans. And We got to break Bobby down. We got to see what did you think about what Bobby did? How'd you think about the offense, the play calling, the game plan? And let's see if Bobby took a step in the right direction, or are folks still out there hunting Bobby and calling for his job? We'll see. We'll talk about Bobby Slowick next right here on Sports Radio 610.